system. I find you in the shows and moving are great. And being a nerd, the sign system is everywhere you go.
Da 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 da.
I am drawing a colossal blank.
Nationwide is on your side.
Are we doing the corporate jingles now? Is that what it is?
I'm running out of theme songs. Fair enough. And what I have in my head is jingles.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how to segue there. Nationwide may be on your side for a nominal fee.
Yeah. So hopefully, maybe in the next 10 years, we blow up and we get a corporate sponsor like Nationwide or State Farm. Either one.
That would be good. That would be hilarious if we're shilling for insurance companies on this podcast. You never know, right? You never know, but yeah.
You know what service provides good quality and support?
What does, Davey? Please do tell.
Design systems. Oh.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah. Some of them.
Been too long, man. It's been too long.
Welcome back. You'll be hearing this in the new year, 2024.
It is 2024. I watched Blade Runner 2049, and I think they had flying cars by 2024. I think I heard somewhere in there that they had flying cars, and we don't. We do not have flying cars, Davey. I'm a little disappointed.
It's like, what year was did the Jetsons take place? What,
okay, hold on. These are the important things. Hold on.
We got to look that up.
I think I saw 2020.
No way.
Hold on. Oh, I think 2020. All we got was COVID, not flying cars.
No flying cars, no hoverboards.
The virus.
Just something that spreads that is not as beneficial for us. Jokes aside, I think today would be a good talk at the beginning of the year to talk about the topic of getting your first design systems job. On my ADP list mentorship, I've been getting a lot of requests for portfolio reviews for folks that are interviewing for mid-level or junior level design system jobs. And I thought today might be a good time to talk about that. I think on the flip side, we could also on the back end of this talk about people that may want to transition into design systems from being a product design journalist. I'm saying journalist because I'm a product design journalist.
You're the Walter Cronkite or the Dan Rather of design system journalism.
Yeah. The John Madden of design systems journalism.
I think that is a bit of a stretch to call John Madden a journalist, an analyst maybe for football, but
an analyst. True. So we were joking a little bit, off air about how to get into design systems when you're first getting up and running. And tell me a little bit about what your thoughts on that, PJ.
Yeah, so go to college, get a degree in physics, like invent the ability to travel through time backwards, make said time machine, go backwards in time about 10 years, you're going to be fine. Piece of cake. Frustratingly, it has turned into a circus to get a job in design systems now that we've, quote, figured it out and there's, certain skills that you need. And I'm air quoting the hell out of that to where it's become much, much harder to get a job, whereas a lot of us yokels just got it because we fell into it. It's entirely unfair, and I think that's where I'd want to just start this conversation, is that it is unfair, and it's not like we were doing anything special to get a job in design systems other than just trying to do it in real time.
There's sort of two trains of thought that I see here. So one is sort of like the path that we had forged, and maybe the case where we may be tasked to do something and we took it upon ourselves to think, oh, well, as systematic thinkers, we should really develop a design system to support this because we're going to be looking to scale XYZ by some multiple, like in the next few years. And we might maybe, we might have multiple products that we might need to support, whether those are internal tools like what WAM supported or multiple streaming applications like Disney Plus and Hulu. That's one mechanism. And I think that I've been talking to a lot of designers that have been in that case where they're design systems team of one initially to get started, and they're looking to move into a new role as a full-time design systems practitioner. And that I think most likely would be the best, most suitable way to get into it, because you're building from knowledge that you already have. You're already an embedded design resource within the company. You have some access, a stone's throw away, to design leadership. It becomes a little tougher, like you said, if said designer from one team wanted to apply for a different design system job at an external company. That's where it gets a little fuzzier.
It does. And a lot of the articles I see online about design systems are typically covering the most superficial and the simplest part of it, which if I was hiring, I would be less concerned about, which is like, I'm going to design a button. Great. Okay. That's nice. But that's the easy part. The hard part is the people aspect and the psychological hurdles and what's the term? Obstacle course of engaging with customers, which are your designers and engineers, understanding how to get them, how they're using it, how to get them to use it in an optimal way and an optimal amount, creating visibility, communicating. It's all those sorts of things that are much more difficult. And what makes it even harder is those are incredibly hard to just do on your own in a vacuum. It's very easy to go and design buttons and type ramps and all those things. You can do that on your own until you're blue in the face. Challenge is engaging with teams and people. You can't just make that up. You can't just like bring in your cousins and say like, here, we're going to pretend it's design system time and you're going to use my design system. And that's what makes it difficult, is that's the real challenge of design systems, at least in my opinion. And that's hard to replicate outside of being within a design systems team, which creates this unfortunate loop. Like, well, do you have design systems experience? No. Well, sorry, we can't hire you for this job. Which is just frustrating.
If you were to ask what are some of the hard skills that you would need to be able to perform this job, obviously the first one that comes to mind is the tools expertise, like having some ability to create components or deconstruct components, having that understanding. I think that's one. But even something like task management expertise. I know we don't talk about that as a hard skill, but being able to document and define what the tasks are for building your system. What are the different, what might it level up to from a task to a initiative or an epic level? And then estimation of time, cost, that sort of thing. I think that's also very important. And one thing that you've brought up quite a bit through multiple podcasts is writing I believe writing is a hard skill.
Especially right now in the world of remote, it's pretty important at this point of being able to articulate yourself. I can't articulate myself through written word. Slack and or Teams or whatever your company uses is utilized pretty heavily nowadays. And then even, of course, documentation. So it's not necessarily something that shows up in an interview, although like, should it? Maybe. But I think it's a critical part. That's like a funny thing. Like, sorry to go on a soapbox, but like what we vet in an interviewing process is oftentimes which use the least. You know, we do a portfolio review, which, you know, obviously that's pretty important from a design perspective, but how do you work? It's hard to vet how you work with engineers and how you work with cross-functional partners in an interview, because it's really easy to say, yeah, I work with them all the time. I love to work with them. I talk to them all the time. I include them. Like, great. You can say all the right things. It's hard to see that until they're in there doing the work with people.
No, that's a great call out. So obviously, like I do remember, I had a bit on my LinkedIn like many, many years ago. It's like, yeah, I work well with engineers. Like, yeah, so does everybody else, right? Or at least they claim to. I'm BFFs with engineering. Sure. Maybe, right? But I think what it comes down to is then how do you negotiate change? And it's a change management exercise, and it's an exercise in communication. So the big piece I would look for in a design system designer, maintainer, whatever we call it, is the ability to negotiate changes and fixes and understanding constraints from an engineering point of view. And if you don't have the understanding, it's very easy to have engineers pull you in and provide that context. Like they're super open and love to talk about this sort of stuff. It's really just us giving them the opportunity to work with us earlier.
Mm-hmm. And those are the things that I think are much more critical. You can be the best designer in the world, but if you can't find a way to get that shipped, it doesn't really matter. And I think the what separates the folks that look good as designers and the folks that are good designers are the ones that ship and find a way to get that idea out there as, you know, as high quality as possible in a way to where it can actually get out the door and not kill engineers in the process. And that's hard. That's really hard to vet in an interviewing process, but those are the sorts of things that I'm, you know, when I've been a manager, that's the sort of thing I'm looking for.
Yeah, we could sort of throw a different point of view on this. Interviewing and building case studies, specifically like knowing that UPJ had gone from Pinterest to PayPal. And then I've just over the course of the last year and a half, when I do find a good opportunity to interview, I take it. You know, I think it's just a good idea to open the door for opportunities. And one thing that has been a little tricky during design system interviews is what to show. And there's some in terms of like staff designer roles or principal roles, do we show how components are built, and do we show my knowledge, for instance, in Figma and how to build scalable components, or do I focus on ops frameworks and how I handle design system support? Do I focus on task management? It's a little bit all over the place, I feel like, sometimes. So I do have like multiple versions of my my presentation, but it's sometimes I feel like the hiring managers may not also know exactly what they're looking for also.
That's a damn good thing to figure out, because if they don't know what they're looking for, just think about having to work for that hiring manager. If they cannot articulate what they're looking for in this role and what's, you know, what kind of skills are going to set them up for success, then, you know, I would just really take that into consideration if this is a good fit. One thing I typically ask when I'm interviewing is, what do you want to see? What are you looking for? I don't want to show you things that you don't care about. So just tell me and I'll give you that. And if I don't have that, then I'll let you know. And then we've all saved ourselves a lot of time. But yeah, if they can't clearly articulate what they're looking for and why and how that's going to be helpful for the role, then boy, be careful.
It's a bad sign.
It's a bad, bad sign.
Yeah, there's been interviews where I've gone in and I would go and present more design ops related things, like talking about the design system program, setting up the program, theming and that sort of thing. And then I'll get to, and this has happened over the last 6 months, I'll get towards the end of the interview and I'll open up to answer just open-ended questions. And then someone on the panel may say, oh, can I see some components that you've built? And then I'll think, well, this is a staff level role. You're asking me to break open Figma and show you some components. I'm more than happy to, but I don't think that this is what that role would be comprised of.
Yeah. You and I have had some really different experiences. Cause like, yeah, I don't know, man. I think the thing that is, can be frustrating is there's an expectation that you know everything. And I don't think that's realistic. And what I'm, when I'm hiring, what I'm looking for is, can they learn? Can they stretch? They're not going to know everything. How can we expect them to? And they're especially not going to know how we work because they've never worked there. Are they able to flex? Are they able to, adjust and think on their feet? Those are the sorts of things that I'm looking for, because look, you can build, like, Figma is the thing now. It's not going to be the thing forever. There's going to be new tools and people are going to have to learn them. And so seeing that, I think, is more critical. Figma comes out with new features, it feels like every Tuesday. So they're going to have to learn those new features too. And so, you know, going back to the subject of this podcast, I would try to articulate or represent the ability to learn new things, especially if this is your first role as a design system practitioner. If you can show a pattern of, hey, I've learned this, I've learned this, I've done this, I've done that, hopefully it will create an understanding that, like, sure, you don't have direct experience in design systems, but this candidate's done all sorts of things and they'll learn it. And so that can be one area where you can stretch out and show potential, which is what you're really aiming for your first role, is that you have the potential to meet the expectations of that role.
Yeah, obviously the Figma portion, I feel like I would have a, just thinking on top of my head, I would have a requirement of medium level knowledge, not expert level knowledge, like medium level knowledge. So you understand how to get around, you understand the differences between groups and frames, text styles, variable, like maybe you know a little bit about variables, but the willingness to learn and to keep up, whether it's this tool or, like, previously Facebook had our own tool, Proton. So obviously we would have had to learn that, like, on the fly. But having some medium knowledge of design tools and then picking whatever up you need. So let's say, for instance, the team was using Token Studio and a combination of that and Style Dictionary. You may not know that, but if you're willing to learn and dive in and work with a design partner or eng partner to utilize those two, cool. That's all we're looking for.
That's why I've always, that's just how they roll. They're always learning something new because they're so spread thin. To say it more positively, their skill level is broad. And so they're constantly on the lookout for new things and trying and digging into new subject areas. And so I haven't worked with a design technologist that has been poor experience. It's always been so refreshing to have someone that could just jump on pretty much whatever and do it well.
Now, if let's say we were coaching a product designer up, like, in our org, and they wanted to get into design systems, and let's say there's an area of focus that you would want them to look into or gain a little more knowledge on, what would that area be?
Systems thinking, pattern recognition, being able to look across a landscape and connect dots and see, hey, these things seem like they're trying to solve the same problem. That's, typically what I'm looking for is the ability to connect the dots. The joke I always say is that if you're talking to someone and they're trying to explain how a feature works across a product and they look like they have a deer in headlights look, like it's overwhelming, that is a good sign because they're trying to connect everything across the entirety of a product ecosystem. And it's just like staring into the sun. And, of course we want to find ways to focus and have it, but like, they're trying to make those connections and some people don't. And I think, everything can be learned, but I think some people just like, nope, this is my feature. This is my thing. It exists in a little vacuum. This is all I'm worried about. And that, tends to be their happy space. And then other people are constantly trying to like figure out how it all fits together. Those are the folks that you want to nurture. And if someone wants to jump in and doesn't have that approach, you want to try to nudge them into that. Like, but how does this exist outside of your feature? Have you looked at how it, is there something similar to what you're making? That's what I would try to do, is try to push them out of their nest.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, the mental model of you asking me in a presentation about XYZ component and then me just trying to recall the different props and going through and say, well, I can make it do this thing. I could recompose it to do this other thing. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And I would look for one ability, like you said, the ability to write and articulate, being able to explain like what you're doing. I think written is really well, because then you could work very successfully asynchronously. But the ability just to tap onto like the pattern recognition, being able to break down components into smaller chunks and understanding that with the smaller chunks, you could compose it in any other sort of way to make a very more bespoke thing. Like I think the sort of assumption with design systems is like we take out the bespokeness of things, and that's not always completely true. You could always make bespoke templates and screens out of our things.
Yeah. You know, that's such a trodden over subject. I'm just tired of it. There are plenty of bespoke components in a design system because all those components were made from scratch. 99% of the time they're made from scratch. That's literally the definition of bespoke. They're just not your bespoke components. I think that's the problem. And I get it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But like every design system I've worked on has built all the components from the ground up, which is the definition of bespoke.
At some point they were bespoke.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just not your bespoke. And I get that. And it may not be that our bespoke is what you need for your bespoke feature, but they are bespoke. They're totally bespoke. And yeah, so it's just what amplitude of bespokeness do we need here? I think the other thing that I'd be looking for is just someone that isn't afraid to try something. And it may not work because I think a lot of what I see with some design system practitioners is it can be really scary, right? Like you could make a change that impacts everything, and there, understandably, there's some anxiety involved with that. And it's just a matter of how do you react to that anxiety? Do you push through it and figure out a way to make it work? Or do you just freeze up and you're unable to get over the fact that you know there's some risk associated with what we do, and that's okay. It isn't for everyone, but I think you know uncovering like how comfortable are you with making a change that could impact every single feature of every single surface, and it may break.
Hopefully by the time you work in the space, you feel comfortable, you know, but you acknowledge the risk. I do have a question. How often do people that you've worked with use the word spike?
I think they don't use the term spike, but they mean spike.
Got it.
Something like I want to spend X amount of days on something, or I want to focus this sprint on something. They're saying spike. They're just not saying spike, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I feel like here there's a lot of designers that are unable to do that. It's either all or nothing. And like by the time you get done with it, it's a little like you've gone too far. Like I think what we're talking about is spiking the work or piloting it, whatever you end up calling it, time boxing it, right? And then if it doesn't work, then it's okay to bail on it. It's a huge problem, I feel like, for us much larger teams, because we do sometimes have the sunk cost fallacy where we've spent so much time on this color system that it's 3 years in the making and I can't undo this. Well, you can.
Not to oversimplify, which I tend to do, but just don't spend 3 years on it.
Yeah. Maybe spend a year and a half on it and then see if it works or not. And
What I'm typically trying to do is say, how quickly can we get something good enough out the door to learn? Because the last thing you want to do is spend 3 years on something that just is like busted. Just the core essence of it isn't going to work. That doesn't benefit anyone. And so, especially if you're a centralized team and you're a little, you know, if there's a little bit of distance between you and feature designers and feature engineers, that distance can create a lack of understanding. So it really is beneficial to get something out the door as quickly as possible. I mean, this is just like 101 for building products, like get something out the door quickly, learn from it, adjust, vet whether it's even worth continuing to invest in it and proceed. This isn't even like Silicon. This is how like homies were doing it in the like 1800s, 1900s, right? Like it just, it's a less risky approach to making things because you're getting input and you're learning faster than the typical waterfall method.
Well, it's just interesting because I feel like most orgs now have sort of gone away from agile, and that's sort of how we were thinking 10 years ago, where we'd work in these small chunks and then we maybe run an experiment or we launch it. We wouldn't run an experiment. We just launch the thing, right? And then if we don't like it, then we pull it back. We do it again. But we don't do that anymore. Like, I feel like we go full, we do experiments. Sometimes we track the successfulness of it, but we sort of, it's constantly these bigger and bigger pushes. Like there's less of an interest to try things out.
That's interesting. Cause I've seen the opposite. However, what I've seen is we don't want to spend a lot of time on it. Let's ship some busted ass feature and see if it works. No, that's not what I meant by less time. Just, you know, reduce the scope, like keep it simple. Like don't ship something busted because of course it's not going to work. Like it should work correctly. There should just be less of it. Should be simpler, like, you know, less, just a simple digestible element that does what it says it's going to do. It does it well, it's clear, and then you can add things on as you go. But I think that might be one reason why Agile may have lost its sheen, is because it was employed in ways that may not work. If it's half baked, then don't ship it. But I would argue there's many times ways to ship something without everything that you know, your heart desires in it, in a way that's still very usable and a very, you know, refined product to deliver to people.
Yeah. The last thing that I wanted to touch on was just creating artifacts or frameworks or processes that can withstand org change. So for instance, we know that brand's going to change. So like if you have any sort of brand team or visual designers, you know that maybe once every year and a half or so, like you're going to have a change to like your color system or your primary colors, maybe a new typeface. How do we work and provide the systems thinking to make that as painless as possible, right? So if you're creating a second theme, theoretically, you could create your 1,000th theme.
That's like bringing it back to the topic of podcasts. That's another thing that if you can show in an interview that you're able to deal with change, because man, corporate America, there'd be a lot of change, man. that's just part of the game. And finding ways to show that you can navigate change, still be, you know, land productive, impactful solutions through that change, come up with constructive solutions to work through that change. Those are going to be really helpful because especially right now, change is all over the place. And that's another unsung topic of hiring, especially for junior designers, is how, you know, how do you manage change? How do you adapt to, you may be working on something Tuesday and then the next day, unfortunately, fair or not, you got to work on something completely new on Wednesday.
Yeah. And it's not as much as being completely unflappable because there is, you know, obviously emotion and, you know, care to your work, but being able to adapt and really try to soak it in and then adjust and steer the ship a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Make no mistake. I'm not saying that, thank you, sir. May I have another? That's not what I'm suggesting, but more of just look like this is, it is what it is. You know, we tried to suggest not changing, or maybe we suggested that we did change, but either way, we're rolling with the punches because ultimately a lot of these things are above our pay grade, and we have to, part of the job is just trying to work within the constraints of what we're given, for better or for worse.
Well, we've hit our over 30 minutes for this. You know, this is a wonderful constrained conversation.
It was.
Oh, Happy man. New Year.
It was fun. And it's been a while. Yeah. Happy New Year.
Have a good one. Take care.
You too. Later.